Hi, my name is Noel Bell, and today I'm chatting with Dr. Michael Katz, psychologist, former Yantra yoga instructor, author, photographer, and longtime student of contemporary masters of Tibetan Buddhism and Bon. He is best known as having authored the introduction and edited the popular book Dream Yoga and the Practice of Natural Light. The interview took place at the Gateways to the Mind conference on lucid dreams in London in November 2012, organized by Archetype Events. But rather than chatting at the conference venue, I joined Michael in his hotel bedroom for a cup of tea. As Michael sat cross-legged on his bed and his lucid dreamer Olga worked the kettle in the background, I started by asking Michael about his presentation at the conference. Michael, you said you were within your base at the conference. Yes. What did you mean?
Well, in the US, we're having the presidential election, and there's been a lot of talk about the different candidates' base. And the base for the Republicans is the Tea Party. And some say that the base for the Democrats were the group that occupied Wall Street. And those people have a very passionate and strong feeling about the philosophy of their candidate. So here, being invited to participate in a program that includes many speakers and teachers of lucid dreaming, the people who attend are very passionate and very interested in the subject of lucid dreaming and dream yoga, out-of-body experience. So when I say the base, I mean the people who are most passionate, most strongly involved in doing lucid dreaming themselves. And
so you had no hecklers?
No hecklers today. That's a little unusual, right?
The other thing I was intrigued by, quite apart from the talk and then the workshop, but you started off by saying that you had bits of anxiety about going up on this big stage with the lights and all the rest of it.
Yes.
But you spoke for an hour and a half without any crib sheets.
Yeah.
And you didn't look like you were nervous to me. So from the point of sitting down and being introduced to go on stage where you had that anxiety, what did you do?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to overstate my nervousness, but we all have thoughts and emotions that arise at any moment. And, you know, I'm familiar with many different patterns of thoughts and emotions that I have. But I normally do not feel nervous speaking in front of groups. There was something about this particular conference. Perhaps it was the formality of the conference. That is, a conference center and microphones that were, you know, with a podium. And I'm more accustomed to the kind of program where people are sitting in meditation pillows.
Or in hotel bedrooms.
Or a hotel bedroom like this. But so I did have some awareness of nervousness coming up. And so I applied my Buddhist practice, and that is to look at the different thought and emotions that were coming up, and to look them in the face, and to self-liberate that particular pattern of thoughts. And, you know, I thought that it would be useful for me to integrate that into my talk, to, you know, use that as an example of how we might deal with a thought or emotion that arises. There, one possibility would be to apply an antidote. Mm-hmm. And I had said that, for example, some people might use deep breathing, or they may visualize some peaceful experience. So the alternative in the Buddhist tradition that I'm involved in is to self-liberate. And that is to integrate with the thought or emotion, and then allow it to kind of dissolve of its own accord.
And you mentioned your Buddhist tradition. There are many in the Tibetan tradition. Which one are you a follower of?
So my primary teacher is Chogyal Namkhai Norbu. I think he's a very unique and important teacher. And he certainly had studied traditional Buddhist systems and philosophy and meditation for many years when he was young. But he most particularly is a teacher of Dzogchen. And Dzogchen is considered to be the great perfection teachings that are associated with Tibetan Buddhism. Mm-hmm. But not only found within Tibetan Buddhism. So he's coming from a Tibetan Buddhist cultural and religious tradition, and he's presenting these Dzogchen teachings kind of within that tradition. But you could also imagine that another teacher could be also presenting these Dzogchen teachings, mm-hmm. and not filtering them so specifically through the Tibetan Buddhist tradition. Mm-hmm. These Dzogchen teachings are also found, for example, in the Bun traditions of Tibet. And even these Dzogchen traditions are found, according to Chogyal Namkhe Norbu, in many other dimensions in the universe. So that it's not even only here on Earth, but in other dimensions of beings and places. Mm-hmm.
The other thing in your talk, when you talked about the mirror,
yeah,
that when you look in the mirror, it's not you.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard it before, but it resonated today.
Well, of course, when we look in the mirror, we see a reflection. The key is whether we can maintain the sense of that reflection as applying to everything we see versus grasping on different objects and people in our environment. Mm-hmm. So this is a useful tool for having a sense that everything is not as as real as it seems. Mm. You know, I was saying in the lecture that we've kind of all agreed to drink the Kool-Aid. Mm-hmm. And believe that this reality is so fixed. But, you know, the Buddhists never believe that, and the scientists don't believe it these days either.
Have you ever struggled with letting go in your life?
Oh, yeah, sure. And I gave an example of the struggle that I had letting go of a girlfriend that I had many years ago. And the ending to that story is that even after suffering and all that other stuff, she came back. So then I got more suffering.
Now, you mentioned about the movie that can be changed if you had a dream of, and you're in a movie, that you can go back there and change the outcome.
Well, of course, that's one of the possibilities within a lucid dream, that we can transform the dream intentionally. And sometimes that's useful, especially if it's a pattern, a dream that we've had on a regular basis, sometimes a nightmare, that we continuously have the same pattern or dream arising. So it's very therapeutic if we can change the outcome instead of being afraid or...
But how do we do that?
Well, in a dream, a lucid dream, we intend to change the outcome. We have that intention. And then the mind immediately reacts and changes. But we can also do that therapeutically, you know, in the daytime. Being a psychologist, I also have used those kinds of techniques of rehearsing alternate endings to situations that arise, you know.
I'm halfway through training in transpersonal psychotherapy.
Yeah.
And lucid dreaming is kind of new. I mean, we've dealt with Jung and guided imagery. Do you see lucid dreaming becoming a modality in itself in the future?
Well, I think that lucid dreaming can be part of the modality. You know, today we did a guided induction, and that was a powerful therapeutic tool. Many people do not have the capacity to lucid dream, and particularly not have the capacity to do it on a regular on-command type basis. Mm-hmm. So it's a little difficult to imagine that there's going to be such a groundswell of people who are, you know, able to lucid dream on command and so on. But the people who do have that capacity can effect tremendous transformation, incredible healing in a very short even instantaneous time.
Because speaking to Robert,
yeah,
he mentioned it can be useful for the treatment of PTSD.
Right.
Would you go that far as well?
I think it can be useful. It's just a matter of whether that person can access the lucid dream state. So it's a kind of hit or miss.
So the client needs insight.
I'm sorry?
The client needs insight into their own condition of what they're suffering from.
Well, the client has to be able to lucid dream. And if they can't lucid dream, then they're not going to be able to have a therapeutic experience in the dream. If they can, that's a whole different story. And if they can't, there are other ways to access, you know, therapeutic healing through trance or hypnosis, other transpersonal type of therapeutic resources.
Let's assume people listening to this can't.
Yes.
How do they go about doing it then?
Well, you know, I spent an hour and a half talking about different ways that people can begin to develop their dream experience from whatever level they are. Some people, it might be that they're remembering more dreams. For some people, they might be having more lucid dreams. And some people who have lucid dreams, it might be that they are able to transform their dreams. So how to do that, I said today that maybe it depends on how committed and what kind of investment we want to make in developing that capacity. Because, you know, some of the great lamas, they went on retreat for many years, months, years, and they just applied themselves to meditation and doing these kinds of practices of the night. And they had real experiences. And I think that, you know, it's a very difficult equation in the West, you know, when we're busy, we have work, we have families, to apply that level of intention and commitment. So so it's not an easy thing, and there's no easy answer. But certainly, you know, many of us who are teachers of lucid dreaming, we can give techniques, you know, of how to enhance the possibility. For example, even waking up intentionally in the early morning and then trying to remember a dream that we've been having and then making a strong intention to go back into the dream and become lucid. So that's an important method that's within the Tibetan Buddhist tradition.
You're listening to an interview with Dr. Michael Katz with me, Noel Bell, which took place at the Gateways to the Mind conference on lucid dreams in London in November 2012, organized by Archetype Events. The question I was thinking about as a practitioner would be, can you take someone through dream interpretation outside of a therapeutic alliance where you've signed the contract and all that? So essentially, can someone on an ad hoc friend basis help a friend go through lucid dreaming interpretation of symbols?
I would say yes, unequivocally, you know.
Is there any risks, though?
Well, you know, of course, in the realm of possibility, there are risks. It's like actuarial statistics. Yeah. There's going to be risks in anything that anyone does. But I think that the advantages outweigh the risks dramatically. And certainly, you know, people who are very interested in helping facilitate understanding of dreams can do that. You know, a professional therapist might have developed much more experience, have other techniques, and it might be that they are more adept. Mm-hmm. But I certainly wouldn't, you know, limit the possibilities if... if there's another person, somebody you're close to, and I sometimes do public talks and I explain how someone might begin to self-interpret their dreams. So I've done that many times.
Is that the ideal?
I think that the ideal is to become enlightened. But if you're working in the area of healing and therapy and integration, then it's hard to really totally self-interpret your own dreams, because your projections are often so strong that you can't see, you know, what you need to see. Sometimes it's so obvious to another person, but to yourself it's not, you know.
Can the role of groups help in lucid dreaming?
I think so. I use group work, you know, almost continuously in my programs. And we dramatize important dreams, which I found to be a marvelous and very exciting resource. And I call this lucid dream theater work. Mm-hmm. And it seems that people have the experience, the powerful experience of what another person first had as a dream. Mm-hmm. But then we can all share that powerful experience by acting it out.
Yeah,
it's almost like having that dream yourself.
In the induction in the workshop, my symbol was a shiny, powerful golden sword.
Yes.
And the interpretation I had with it was powerful awareness of boundaries and being able to be assertive.
Yes.
Because I've had dreams recently, which I discussed with Robert over lunch. I have had ones of being suffocated. And funny enough, the chap that I was sitting next to was kind of like elbowing his... You know, we were kind of in that space thing.
Oh, yeah. So he was... If Robert is correct, it's kind of his dreams manifest the experience in the day. I guess that you created that. But, you know, when you have a dream like you had, or a symbol like you had of a sword, almost immediately, I think that's the symbol of Manjusri, mm-hmm. who cuts through ignorance. Mm. And I believe that that's your strength, one of your strengths, that you had that symbol because you have that also that capacity to cut through, you know. And even this interview, I think I'm experiencing your capacity to you know, sharply present your questions and to get to the meat of the matter, so to speak.
Hopefully I do that tactfully.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, I appreciate it's nearly dinner time. Guy Fawkes fireworks are going off in the distance.
Yeah.
But anyone listening, and there's another one, anyone listening, wherever they are in the world who end up listening to this, how would they be able to contact you?
My website is dreamyoga.net. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the best way to contact me. But they could also find me on Facebook. I have quite a few friends. I get there you know, on a regular basis, not every day. But the website is a way to send an email to me. And there's some interesting things on the website as well.
Fantastic. Then finally, Michael, you've been to the UK before.
I've been here before. I've never taught here before. And I really never spent an extended period of time here either. I just passed through kind of a layovers.
Therefore, it's probably an appropriate question then, is there any kind of immediate nuances that you notice in attitudes to maybe stigma? I always think Americans are much more open. Yeah, I've got a therapist. I see them once a week. Where here we're kind of like, you know, much more secretive about it. That's changing.
Right.
But what about attitudes to lucid dreaming? Are you considered freaks in the world in America or here?
Well, I have to say that I'm favorably impressed by the group here. Not all of them are British.
Some of them are from all over.
But I am favorably impressed with the scene, the lucid dream scene here in London. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I might have found as an audience there was a little more reserve than I might have experienced in, for example, I was in Peru, and that's a very different kind of group where, you know, everybody is completely very emotive. But I'm favorably impressed by the London group here, yeah.
Well, thank you for chatting to me. I never thought I'd end up chatting to you where I'm stood at the moment and where you're seated now.
Yeah.
But it's been a pleasure.
My pleasure too, and I hope we see each other again soon in a dream state, if
indeed.
Not.
Thank you, Michael.
All right.
You've been listening to an interview with Dr. Michael Katz. For more podcasts, please visit noelbell.net/podcasts.